Moving along, Maria Julissa Ramos and her co-authors, Spatial and Temporal Variation in Fungal Endophyte Communities Isolated from Cultivated Cotton, Implications for Sustainable Agricultural Practices.
Okay, good morning, everybody. Today I'm going to present the data we collected in 2011 regarding a putative beneficial microorganisms. In this meeting, we have been talking about pathogens, but also we also know that are microorganisms that can be beneficial. So my name, as she says, Maria Julissa Eck Ramos. I am from Mexico, and now I am working in the Department of Entomology in Texas A&M University with Dr. Gregory Swart. I am a plant pathologist, but I joined Greg's lab because he offered me a really interesting way to see how plant pathology could be implemented in a novel way. So he offered me the position to analyze the interaction between plants, fungal endophytes, and insects, or another pathogens. So just as an introduction, I'm going to tell you the story about how has been used, beneficial organisms have been used in cotton production. The best known example is Bt cotton. And Bt cotton was genetically modified cotton, was created because of many years of research in this bacteria, Bacillus thuringiensis. The researchers found out a gene that confers a gene that produces a toxin that can kill Lepidoptera larvae. So many years after that, very smart people introduced the gene into cotton, and now it's widely used all over the world. Another example of a beneficial microorganism is Agrobacterium that has been used to improve cotton to conferring resistance against herbicides. So it's a really, really promising way to see this thing. So, but another way to see it is why we should go to the genetically modified organism. If nature has found many communities living, but nature is so smart, and in nature there are communities living within plants, so they are non-endophytes, and they are putative beneficial organisms there. So the definition of endophyte is like organisms that live within tissues without causing apparent damage. Here, I am showing you what is known. Okay. So you can see here that endophytes have been classified in different functional groups. Like, for example, they can be even dormant pathogens, depending on the circumstances. They can even be in dormant saprophytes, depending on the circumstances, too. And also, they are well-known, like mycorrhizae. They have been studied for many years about the relationship between plants and fungi producing a new organ called mycorrhizae. But most interestingly, they have been also shown to be protective agents against different stresses, like drought, stress, heat, insects, and other pathogens. So based on that, we decided to find out if there are any studies about endophytes in cotton. We found three papers that have been published recently. Well, it was in 2002, almost 10 years ago. In Australia, a group found out that communities were present in cotton, indeed, in Bt cotton, in transgenic cotton. They published a long list of fungal endophytes, but they proved that one, Pomopsis species, that also is known like a putative pathogen, can be inoculated back in the cotton plants and confer resistance against Lepidoptera larvae. They didn't find any symptoms in those plants. Another study, also very important, because as could be dormant pathogens, also in Australia, they studied different native cotton, cotton species in Australia, and then analyzed the endophytes community there to try to find for putative pathogens, and they didn't find any. They found 17 different fungal endophytes, and none of them were potential pathogens. So in Brazil, in 2011, they also published fungal endophyte communities comparing Bt and non-Bt in cotton, and they didn't find any difference in composition of diversity, so indicating that apparently the Bt cotton doesn't harbor a different community of endophytes there. But what happened in the United States? I went back to the 1920s trying to find out any study looking for endophyte communities. And then even they haven't kind of explained it, say that they are fungal endophytes. There have been a lot of people working, trying to find out what is the community present in different plants, but basically focusing in plant pathogens, kind of the way they're supposed to be, because we depend too much about crops and we are focusing trying to prevent diseases, right? But then also reading those papers, I found out that the endophytes that now are kind of starting to emerge like a beneficial ones, they were indeed in those lists. So I would like to talk to people with a lot of more experience of those studies, and then if they are kind of willing to take a look of them, and then could confirm if they are beneficial endophytes indeed. And also, I don't know if they are available any strains of those studies. But anyway, joining Greg's lab, we went out in the field and we decided to collect endophytes and try to play with them in the lab. So the goals of work was analyze endophytes community in cotton cultivating in Texas, because how we are in Texas A&M University, we have available different regions there that we can go and collect and samples. And in addition to that, obtain potentially beneficial strains. So here I am showing you the factors we consider when we analyze the endophyte community. One of them were the different kinds of management ways to cultivate cotton in those regions. One is called conventional and another organic. I would say that conventional is the one that is used BT cotton. It's not a way that you are using conventional seed. So in these conventional management practices, you are trying to find higher yield. And depending on the region is what you need to use. You need to use herbicides, you need to use insecticides, depending of what is going on in those farms. So we went there and they were managed like that. In the organic ones, they were managed following the organic practices. So we divide them in two regions in Texas. I call them south and north, but I would say that is northwest and southeast. So in a region in Lubbock, in another region in close to College Station. And then we analyzed those farms where cotton varieties were cultivated. They were variety trials, and there were five varieties in the conventionally managed and farms, and it was just one variety in the organic farms. So it was because availability that we went and we collect those varieties there. And also we did the collection two times in the season, in June and in August. In June because they were young and they were starting to show squares in Navasota. And later on in August when they had squares and balls. And in addition, they were mature leaves there. So we select randomly 9 to 10 plants in per variety in each site. And then this is just a picture about how we did it. A really important point here was there and collect samples that were asymptomatic. We were really careful about that, trying to diminish the possibility that we can isolate pathogens. And then after that, we sealed the samples and we transferred it to the lab in cool conditions. And then in the lab, we use sterile conditions to isolate them. So we surface sterilize the tissues, and then we also confirmed that nothing was growing on the surface because we did a method called imprinting. So we put the surface of the plants in media that is for growing fungi to guarantee that nothing was left on the surface. So all our controls were fine. And after that, we used two different media, PDA and B8. We could have used a lot more, but for kind of management reasons, we decided to use two of them. And then here I am showing you the picture after 10 days, showing that in the fragments on the leaves, you can see some fungi growing from the fragments. And then after that, we classified them depending on the morphotypes. We purified them, and we identified them using two methods, morphological methods for analyzing fruiting bodies, and molecular biology methods using a sequence that is well known to identify fungi. And then after having the PCR product, also using specific primers, send them to sequence and analyzing using GeneBank database to try to identify them till the species level. And we identify some of them till the species level, but some of them just to general level. And even some of them we couldn't classify anyway, so we put them like unknown. Or also in the GeneBank were kind of uncultured. Okay, so the results, the most important result we found, and when we analyze the biodiversity distribution of these endophytes, so it means that each plant harbors different species, and the abundance of each species depends and defines the biodiversity. We didn't find differences in biodiversity depending on the variety we analyzed, and it was consistent within sites. So you can see here the dots is the values of biodiversity in each variety, and these dark symbols correspond to the leaves early on, and red ones are later on in August. But you compare between varieties here in Snook, there is no difference. In Navasota, there is no difference, and later and so on. But what we found out is difference in biodiversity depending on the time of the season, and could be an explanation about that, because early on, they are young, and they are being in contact with a lot of components in the environment that could increase the biodiversity. But later on, when they are mature, they probably have something established already there. Other important thing we found was in the organic farms, there was a really big variability in the biodiversity index. So we didn't go so far to that study because in the organic farms, we only have one variety. But we want to do more studies about that because we found kind of a really interesting trend about the species we found there. So probably the organic management practices could be helping or not the establishment of this specific species there. Other interesting point was we were able to isolate the majority of these endophytes in those tissues. So we did analysis of fungal tags accumulation curves in each site. And you can see in this figure, the curve when the number of isolates we found reaches a plateau when we cannot find more is the specific number of plants we survey. So we think that with these conditions, we were able to isolate the majority of the endophytes present there. So here I am showing just specific tissues and specific time of the season. But the tendency is similar in all of them. Most importantly, what about the ecology community of these endophytes? What is possible that there is any grouping of those communities depending on the region, of the time of the season, of the tissue? So here we apply ecology analysis. And what I'm showing here is a graph that is called non-metric multidimension plot. What I want to show here is how the communities, each symbol corresponded on one community present a specific time of the season on a specific tissue. And the analysis shows how the clustering of these communities follows a tendency. And these are three different parameters well known in ecology that we have to consider when we do those analyses. For example, the Jacquard index is when you analyze presence-absence. What if one region has just one group of endophytes and another region doesn't have them? And the Bray-Curtis coefficient is one that takes into account the abundance. What if one endophyte is more present in one region or not, or one time of the season or not, or one tissue or not? And then the Euclidean distance takes into account many other things that confers how they are distributed depending on the abundance, presence, absence, or if one was present and then later on appear, or they were not there and then appear. So it's good to know those things because in that way we can find tendencies that could be important and we can focus and see, okay, is the abundance of this endophyte or is present or not. So the only thing we found was time of the season and the tendency is slight, if any. But it kind of makes sense because, as I told you before, apparently the endophytes could be the plants could be harboring a community early in the season because the conditions were different and the plants were different and growing faster. And later on, they were consuming more energy, making fruiting bodies, etc. Well, most importantly, what are those guys? We found out 67 strains. And when we analyzed, we went back to the literature to find out which ones of them could be beneficial ones, and we found several of them. And then we decided to we found some of them. I'm going to tell you some of what they do. Some of them could be pathogens to another microorganisms like bacteria or another fungi. Other has been shown that could be entomopathogenous, so it could be pathogens of insects, and others have been found that could confer resistance against stress or drought. And also something I want to show you here is Phomopsis. We found Phomopsis, the same one that was, well, I mean, it's not the same strain, but it's the same genera that was found in Australia and was shown that confer resistance against Lepidoptera and larvae. So our conclusions are, we have isolated fungal endophyte potential beneficial uses. The endophyte community composition shows little or any effect of location, time of the season of tissue. Our sampling intensity was optimal, at least at our conditions, and the biodiversity index says there's no difference among cotton varieties. And our perspectives are something that Greg is going to tell you in the next talk. And then also to complement this study, we are going to do pyrosequence. So high throughput sequencing to try to find more endophytes that are present in the same samples we use, because we did plating method. There are other ways to try to isolate a specific endophytes that could be not growing in those media. So I want to finish acknowledge with my PI and the members of the lab and our collaborators. Thank you.
We get time for one question.
You called Cornus brachicicola and Stymphilium and Alternaria, you call them endophytes and we call them pathogens. Were there symptoms there? Or
no, there
why
were
symptoms. And why do we call them pathogens?
Okay. In our studies, we didn't find symptoms. But when I analyzed that, and I know that they are known like a pathogen. So I am a plant pathologist. I am really interested to know about the innate immune system of plants. So apparently, there could be some strains that have less virulence and they are not presenting symptoms in the plant, but they are indeed there. So I wouldn't go to study there without knowing that they don't indeed cause symptoms.
Those are also saprophytes, so I would suggest doing some pathogenicity tests to see if they're actually pathogenic.
Yeah, it's why I highlight the red ones that are kind of known like beneficial ones. The other ones are present, but could be that they are less virulent or they need conditions to be pathogenic.
Thank you.